You are Locked On Grizzlies, your daily Memphis Grizzlies podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to Locked On Grizzlies podcast. I'm your host, Mark King. Tuesday edition of the show today. David Kahn from The Commercial Appeal joining me today's episode. What's going on, man?
Man, not a lot. Just going ahead and hydrating. Going to be a warm week out at the golf course, but going to have my eye on the Grizzlies, too, just in case they decide to make any off-season maneuvers this week.
Yeah, I did see your request on social media for them to not do anything while you were at the course. and I can only hope so as well. I've got some stuff planned this week for myself. So David and I are both putting in a request to take it light this week, as for both of us at least. So hopefully they do. Yeah. This is getting to, I guess, a slower time now. We're going to the July period here. We've got, you know, about 7 or 8 weeks for training camp opens. So I just want to start off. What are your general thoughts on the way the front office, this new front office, approached the offseason so far this year?
I think it's clear now what wasn't clear the day that the move was made to elevate Zach Kleiman, demote Chris Wallace, fire J.B. Bickerstaff, et cetera, et cetera. And what wasn't clear to me then in that moment was what the plan was and how they were going to proceed. But I think over the last 3+ months now, we've gotten an idea of that. And that's a kind of a full-scale modern NBA rebuild, which requires teams to get a lot of assets. Requires teams to get a little bit lucky, which the Grizzlies did by bouncing up to number 2 in the lottery. Requires teams to be proactive and opportunistic, which they were by getting a first-round pick for taking on Andre Iguodala's contract. And, you know, they're stockpiling assets, they're trading away veterans, and they are in what I would consider to be a full-on modern NBA rebuild.
It's interesting, like you mentioned, getting lucky has had so much to do with what they were able to do in the offseason. Again, I think some of the things they were able to do, regardless of the Mike Conley trade, but getting Ja Morant, I think, accelerates some of those things that they probably were hesitant to do before. Do you think they still go? You think Mike Conley still gets traded, even if Ja Morant doesn't come to the Grizzlies?
I think he probably does. I think the Grizzlies, one, they still could have gone with a point guard. I mean, Kobe White looked great in summer league. Darius Garland, a lot of people are high on him, so they still could have gone with a point guard. Obviously, you feel a whole heck of a lot better, you know, having the number 2 pick and getting your first choice in point guard and getting the guy that people think will be one of the best players in this class. But yeah, I still think they probably would have moved Conley because, I mean, it became more and more clear, not just from the Grizzlies side, but from Conley's side. Like, I reached out to Mike Conley Sr. A few weeks before the trade actually happened and just, you know, tried to get a sense of where they were at. And the response I got was, it wasn't a matter of the way it was framed to me. It's not a matter of if, but essentially a matter of when. And so I think from that perspective, it was always going to happen. And certainly, though, for the Grizzlies, getting the number 2 pick made it so much easier to part with Mike Conley and ultimately DeLon Wright. If you're not as confident in the rookie point guard, then you're not as confident, you know, walking into free agency and parting with DeLon Wright. And obviously Tyus Jones can hold his own, more than hold his own. But I think that number 2 pick, that set the tone for the whole offseason. I mean, that's the stroke of luck that could bounce this thing forward for the Grizzlies, that we could look back in 4 or 5 years and say, you know what, that was kind of the night that it all changed for the better.
When you're talking to Mike's dad, did you get any sense that Mike was pretty happy with Utah? That's where he wanted to be, or did he have much to do with it?
It was just a text exchange. We didn't go into deep details. You know, I didn't want to pry too much on something when there was clearly not an answer yet. But I think Utah. Well, of course, now if you flash back to the trade deadline, there was a narrative out there a couple of days before the deadline that Mike Conley wanted to be traded to an Eastern Conference team. And I asked him straight up the morning of the trade deadline in Oklahoma City. I said, Mike, is it true that you would prefer, if you're going to be traded to an Eastern Conference team? And he shook his head and said, I don't know where that came from. So, I mean, maybe just some posturing from him. Maybe that was something that was floated out there. But knowing Mike, and knowing the way that he is, I think he's a perfect fit for Utah. I think Utah fans are going to love him. I think he works there. I think that it won't be a radical – it's not going to be some sort of radical culture shift for him at a late stage in his career. I think that it's going to be
right.
a place where he can blend in, where Donovan Mitchell is a great teammate, where Rudy Gobert is a great teammate, where Joe Ingles is a great teammate. And I think he's going to blend in really, really well out there. So I didn't necessarily get a sense one way or the other from Mike Conley Sr., but my view on it is that he's going to be a great, great fit out there.
Yeah, I think he'll be a great fit as well. Like you mentioned, I think Utah fans are going to really, really, really enjoy Mike Conley. But they get a good haul for Mike Conley. They got Grayson Allen, which is a project. They were able to use those
a project indeed.
A project is how I've classified him all along, and I think it's pretty accurate. I don't know. Don't you think?
Yeah, definitely. definitely accurate.
It might be an overstatement at this point. I don't know. Like, there's really no evidence at all to believe that Grayson Allen is an actual NBA player. I mean, it really isn't at this point. And so the only thing he got is he's from Duke, and that's about it. So that's it. But thoughts on Brandon Clark, Grayson Allen, and Summer League? Anything that stuck out to you, those guys playing out there, other than, like I said, Grayson Allen, I think looked underwhelming. But anything else besides that really stuck out to you from this guy's out at Summer League?
Yeah, I mean, Brandon Clark was everything we thought he would be and more. Now I'll also say, you know, the Grant Williams looked really good in Summer League, and that was a guy who was in that same neighborhood, you know, and so who time will tell who's the better NBA player. They're very different. You know, Grant's more of an on-the-ground sort of back-to-the-basket guy who can step out and hit a three. Clark's more of the explosive athlete, and the Grizzlies obviously prioritized his explosive athleticism when they traded up to get him. And I will say that both Williams and Clark looked better than Darius Bazley, who ended up going 23, for what it's worth. So Grizzlies trade up two spots from 23 to 21, and they get Brandon Clark, and another win for this front office, because he was awesome in Summer League. And it's Summer League, so does that translate to a starting role in the NBA and a lot of productivity out of the gate? No, not necessarily, but you got to remember that Brandon Clark, I think, will be 23 by opening night. And
right.
So maybe what we saw in Summer League is a sign that he can contribute earlier than most NBA rookies and be an efficient player earlier than most rookies are. And the other thing that struck me about Clark is he's not a guy that the world got to know all that well, because he spent his first two seasons at San Jose State. And then he sat out a transfer year as he went to Gonzaga. And then last year he was technically a registered junior at Gonzaga. He played one year there and was, I don't want to say overshadowed, but Rui Hachimura for a lot of the season was viewed as a larger attraction there. And so the world doesn't really know Brandon Clark that well. And so just getting to interview him a couple of times, and even just in a scrum setting, I was impressed with him, and then did some more research and homework on him. And this is a really solid guy. He's going to be a good culture piece in the locker room as they sort of build around John Jaren. And he's older than those guys too. So in a sense, even though he'll be a rookie as well, I think he could maybe be a mature sort of calming presence in that group, because we know John Jaren had this infectious youthful energy, but I think Clark's more of a low key, relaxed kind of guy who, you know, will smile and cut up and crack jokes, but he's not as boisterous maybe as those other two, and I think it's good to have a mix, and I think he'll fit in well with the young core that they've got.
You definitely can't build a team with a bunch of 20-year-old kids. You gotta have something there. Maybe he brings a little more life experience, even if that's not basketball experience.
Right. You know? Right. Yeah, and I'll say too, real quick on Clark before I get to Allen. The one knock on him is that he has short arms, and that's why he fell in the draft by a lot of accounts, is that the wingspan isn't there. And so I will say that I did notice there were certain times where, oh, he'll contest a shot, and the elevation was there and the anticipation was there, but then he gets up there and the opposing player is able to release the shot over him when it looks like he's going to be able to block it. And there were also a couple times too where he elevated it to get a jumper off, and it looked like he had all the space in the world, but because that shot's being released from lower, it's easier to contest. So there are some issues there. It's not like, you know, the reason he fell is without merit, but I think he can more than just atone for that with his energy, with his athleticism, and with his anticipation and IQ.
So you think he can work? You think he can work around the wingspan?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back. We'll do more with David Cobb right after this. Talking with David Cobb of the Commercial Appeal. Finish up with Clark. I know you said something about Allen before we took a break. What about Grayson Allen? I just generally, he's just a kid. I think he just got to grow up. I mean, it's just, there are a lot of things out there that are concerning that you're doing in summer league. I mean, getting thrown out of summer league is difficult to do. He's out there managing to do it. I think there are a lot of issues with Grayson Allen, but I also think that there's a situation where it's he has an option next year. So it's kind of like Josh Jackson. He can just go away. And really, right. Honestly, and it's a small enough contract where if it does get contentious in the season, he can just waive him and still go away. But
exactly.
At the same time, I anticipate him to be fighting for minutes. What about you?
Yeah, that two guard position's wide open. I mean, you look at Dylan Brooks, Grayson Allen, Josh Jackson. I mean, that's anybody's game right there in terms of those minutes, and they'll probably be doled out, between the three of them, I would imagine, at various points in the year. I don't know how the Tyus Jones, Ja Morant playing together thing's going to work. It's not as natural of a pairing as Ja Morant and DeLon Wright playing on the court at the same time because of the size limitations, the defensive limitations, the shooting limitations. So if they're not going to log a ton of minutes from the backup point guard at two, I think it's just going to be a free-for-all at that position with three guys who have a lot to prove. I mean, obviously, right. I think Dylan Brooks brings a little bit of a leg up, at least from the perspective of those who have followed the Grizzlies for a few years, because he's proven it. He's done it at a high level for an entire season as a rookie. But there's some questions there, and the regime that brought him in and the coach that brought him that, kind of worked with them is gone. So, he's for better or worse, got a fresh bill too. And so I think it's going to be an open fight for minutes there. The issue with Grayson Allen is if you're a punk and you're sort of going to be this guy, like, and this is going to be your shtick and this is who you are, then be good. Be a good contributing player, and you can get away with it. And, in fact, it'll be something that maybe people in Memphis come to embrace and support.
Be good or be tough.
Yeah, exactly. But you can't pull this crap and not be good. It blows my mind. And maybe that sounds a little harsh for a beat writer. Maybe that's not really my place to say that. But
I'll say it for you, David.
but the reason I maybe come down hard on Grayson Allen is for one thing. When we got him out in Vegas after his first game with the Grizzlies, after the trade was approved and he finally got to play, I didn't ask him about, the tripping and the track record and the reputation that he'd built at Duke, because aside from a couple instances as a rookie that were pretty minor compared to some of the things he did at Duke, that was something that wasn't a big part of his game last year. And so, you know what? Like, all right, like maybe me writing a story about Grayson Allen, reputation now after tripping people in college, like maybe that would do better, in terms of reader engagement and stuff. But you know what? He seems to have put that behind him for the most part. So I'm not even going to bring it up. I'm not going to ask him about it. I don't want to get our relationship off on a tense foot. And then two games later, he goes out and gets a tech, two flagrants, and gets ejected from the game. And I'm like, I give this guy the benefit of the doubt. Like, I wasn't even going to bring it up. Like, I didn't even think this was a part of who he was anymore. And then he goes and takes it to a whole new level. So that was my experience. And it sort of rubbed me the wrong way a little bit. I was like, man, I gave this guy a pass on this. And then, here he goes. So curious to see how they move forward with him.
Well, there's a lot of guys that are viewed as quote unquote punks or assholes in this league. Chris Paul, for one, is widely viewed like that, but he's also very, very good.
He's a great player,
Like Pat Beverly's one. He's viewed as a really, like, kind of like a punk, like, just gets in your face. It's annoying, but he's also good. Like, it. So
he's well-respected at this point.
It doesn't matter, I feel like you kind of, right, you have to kind of pay your dues in this league and to be able to get that mantra of, okay, I can be that type of player.
Right. Absolutely.
But then again, you can't just, like you said, you can't just be that type of player and also be terrible, which is what he was in summer league. Outside of one half of the last game, he was not good at all.
Yeah,
I think it's more concerning when you're not good than when you're just crazy good.
I agree. I mean, and he was also, when he went into the game, and it's summer league, so let's not dissect it or overanalyze it too much. But
sure,
when he went into the game, for the most part, it seemed like the chemistry sort of ceased to exist because it was, all right, Grayson Allen's going to, you know, put his head down and just bull rush the basket with the ball. And it sort of, you know, this was a summer league team that, I mean, they were whipping the ball around. You know, their ball movement was on point. They were really in tune. And, I mean, I credit part of that to one, they played in Salt Lake, so only a few teams played the week before. The Grizzlies did, so that certainly helped them kind of get things going in the right direction. Two, they had their head coach out there who was, you know, going to have pretty high standards for them. And,
sure,
and three, they had a decent amount of talent for a summer league team. So, but they looked pretty good. And then Grayson Allen would go in there and kind of disrupt the chemistry. I mean, he ended up closing pretty well in the championship game, but overall was not impressed with his first outing with the Grizzlies.
Yeah, his offense is very predictable right now. His offense is, he's going to, like you said, like you mentioned, try to get into the basket against three people, which doesn't work. Or when he doesn't have the ball, he runs from break to the corner, back to the break to the corner. And that's about it. I mean, I said this on the show last week. It's very easy to guard someone when they don't move. Like, when they don't go anywhere, it's super easy. I mean, I can be out there guarding Grayson Allen if he's not gonna move. And
yeah,
so,
and he didn't hit a lot of shots either. So
yeah,
he's got to be a guy that knocks down, you know, 37-38% of his three-pointers, I think, you know, to find a long-term home in the league. And, you know, he got a little better as the season went on with Utah last year as a rookie, but he's still got a lot to prove.
I think at the end of being like this, and I don't want to spend a whole episode on Grayson Allen, but it is important to know that he will, like we mentioned, he'll be fighting for a spot. And at the end of the year, you just hopefully at the end of the year, you have a clear cut idea who your future shooting guard is or future role player shooting guard is. That's what the hope is at the end of the year.
Yeah.
Whether that's,
you've got three
Dylan
guys
or whoever.
Who, and one of them you want to rise from the pack because that would, if the Grizzlies can escape, I've said this all along, that if they can mirror the path that the Hawks took last season, which was to let a rookie point guard take his lumps and to have a second year power forward and John Collins really take a big step forward, which would be Jaren in this example. And of course the point guard out there, Trae Young, John Morant here. And then the third piece that they had emerged that was huge for them was Kevin Huerter at shooting guard. And if the Grizzlies can have a shooting guard emerge from their pack of guys who are at that position, then I think you'll feel really good about, you know, potentially feel really good about where this team is at going into next season.
I think so, too. Let's take another quick break. We'll come back. We'll finish up with Tyus Jones and Andre Iguodala right after the break. Welcome back to the show. David Cobb of the Commercial Appeal joining me. You mentioned Tyus Jones a couple times. I do want to talk about this. I think it's important to know that, you know, because I've exhausted this topic on my show. I've talked about it here and there. I think you probably know how I feel about this topic. But I do want to understand how you view Tyus Jones versus DeLon Wright, or Tyus Jones plus assets versus DeLon Wright. How do you view what the Grizzlies did? And again, like I said, it's not wrong. It's just kind of a different approach.
It is.
What they're doing.
Yeah. I think the caveat that you threw in there is huge, and that is plus assets. Tyus Jones
Correct.
Plus assets. Because I think if you look at Tyus Jones versus DeLon Wright, I honestly think DeLon Wright makes more sense for the Grizzlies because of what I mentioned earlier, which is his ability to play off the ball, which is something we all saw at the end of last season. He went out there. He could play the two. He was a really good defender. He's got some size on him. And it was a dynamic sort of situation where Mike Conley could play off the ball because DeLon Wright could handle the ball. DeLon Wright could play off the ball. And I could sort of see that vision with Ja and DeLon. Now, Tyus Jones, I don't see the off-the-ball component quite as much. He's a better natural distributor than DeLon Wright. I think he's just a better natural backup point guard altogether. But the difference is the plus assets. And I think that the two second-round picks that they netted in the sign-and-trade is the reason, I mean, ultimately what prompted this to happen.
Right.
you know, because I don't know this for a fact, but I would anticipate that perhaps the Grizzlies would have matched the offer that the Mavericks gave DeLon Wright. But then maybe the Mavericks were like, well, if you don't push this thing any higher for us, we'll throw in 2 second-round draft picks. You know what
sure.
I mean?
Yeah.
The Mavericks kind of had a ceiling for what they were willing to pay for DeLon Wright, perhaps. And, you know, the Grizzlies didn't want to match some outlandish offer, but they didn't want to lose him for nothing. And I don't know that for a fact, but and I don't know if that's even technically legal, you know, under NBA rules. But I have a feeling that there may have been some of that involved. And so the Grizzlies are in – this just reinforced to me the position that they're in and the approach that they're taking is that DeLon Wright is somebody who they value because he's somebody that they acquired in that Marcus Gasol trade, and we saw how they've you know, turned CJ Miles into additional assets. We've seen how they've turned you know, Jonas Valanciunas into a key piece for the next 3 years, and they value DeLon Wright as well. And the fact that they were willing to sort of shift there, I think shows just how this rebuild is sort of shaping up, because those 2 second-round picks, yeah, they're second-round picks, but they were viewed as more valuable, I think, to the Grizzlies than maybe the 2 or 3 extra wins that DeLon Wright would have brought to the team next season.
I think you're right. I mean, I think that, and like you said, everybody has a price, you know, in this league, and it's a little like the Mavericks saying, I want DeLon Wright, and like, well, you can't have DeLon Wright. Well, what about if I give you just, you know, what would it take to get DeLon Wright? And then it's like, well, we like him, but I don't know if we like them that much, you know, and so everybody has a price in this league. And so, you know, in a way they've now created I would say a bigger issue, but they have created a roster problem is they do have to have playmaking and scoring on the wing. And something I mentioned, they don't have to solve that right away. They're going to be bad. They don't have to solve that this year, but they will have to solve it. And I think that will ultimately for me will be, you know, how I view it is like, okay, I think that was, you know, I think it worked out really well or vice versa, because even at the end of it, I'm not sure if those second round picks are very, very bad. I think they're pretty bad second round picks, like 60. So, you know, ultimately, like, do you view, again, like I said, Tyus Jones plus some really bad second round picks, is that better to have than just DeLon Wright that can be a different type of playmaker? So, again, like I said, they in a roundabout way, they've created a situation where they have to go resolve something else. But like you mentioned, the assets is what they were worth it. And that's, again, it's not wrong. It's just different. Before I get you out of here, I wrote a piece today about Andre Iguodala. And everybody has been saying to trade Iguodala, this big debate of obviously you've seen it, whether you hold Iguodala, you buy him out, you trade him. And I wrote today that they should do neither of those. They should try to package Iguodala plus assets and go get somebody they really value. And obviously the main target was Malik Beasley from Denver, because I think that makes sense, but it doesn't have to be that person. But I think ultimately you can use him and package assets that you've gotten, like this, these 2 second-round picks for Tyus Jones, and try to go out and get a player you really like, because you're not going to get players who come into your free agency. Try to go out and get a player you really like for the long term. What do you think about that?
Yeah, no, that's a great idea. The interesting thing with that, though, is if they do bring a player back in an Iguodala deal, then they've got to make another cut. Because if you think about it right now, with Howard and Iguodala in, they stand at 17. If Marko Gudurić, the Serbian wing, the three-point shooter, ends up signing, that puts him at 18. And so you figure, okay, Dwight Howard's out, now we're back to 17. Andre Iguodala's out, now we're down to 16. But then if you get a player back for Iguodala, then suddenly Ivan Rabb's chances don't look very good. And you know, maybe you're saying farewell to Solomon Hill or something as well. So that's an interesting part of this to me, is just the roster management side. But to your point, it's a good point. They're clearly going to try and extract something of value from another team for Andre Iguodala. And clearly the Grizzlies are not beholden to this narrative that's out there of, oh, do what's right by Iggy and let him walk. You know, I think if he's going to get bought out, the Grizzlies would be wise to try and negotiate a buyout for lesser, you know, for less than his full, I think it's 17.3 or 17.9 or something along those lines. So anyway, if you could get a Malik Beasley, I mean, heck to the yes. What else, in your opinion, if anything, would the Grizzlies have to give up, you know, to make a deal like that reality?
They'd have to give up a first round pick. I think they'd have to give up a first round pick to get Malik Beasley. But again, you're talking about a guy who would be your long-term shooting guard. He's an excellent shooter. He's an excellent playmaker. He's a guy that fits your quote unquote timeline. He's like, I think he's 22. And so you get his bird rights, and so you can go out right. and match whatever you want. I mean, it's a scenario where, and it doesn't have to, again, it doesn't have to be Malik Beasley, but I think that, again, instead of the scenario has always been, what can you extract asset wise for pick wise for Andre Iguodala?
Yeah, you know, he could be an interesting piece for Denver too, because they're a team that in this wide open West feels like can compete with, you know, with anybody. He could be a sort of veteran presence to add to their rotation. You know, I could see them being interested in that. Clearly, you know, they've invested heavily in Jamal Murray and Nikola Jokic, and you know, is Malik Beasley going to be a huge priority, or do they have the cap room to make him a huge priority? I don't know. So he could be somebody, you know, that they could target. I like where you're going with that, and I'm sure they're exploring all scenarios. And I'm also sure, I'm not sure, but I would imagine that, you know, this thing could drag on, or it could end sure. tomorrow. I mean, they could get a phone call with the deal that you know is clearly the one worth taking. So it's intriguing. I applaud the Grizzlies for not letting Andre Iguodala walk away for nothing, and you know, trying to extract every last bit of compensation that they can from the whole situation.
Well, you know, the way you approach it is, if there's only three teams in this league that currently has luxury tax space to even take $17 million. So they're going to have to get a player for it anyway. So my thought was, look, you know, instead of what can you assets can you gain, pick-wise, go out and be on the offensive. But, again, like you mentioned, there's a lot that will happen between now and there's a good chance they just take this into the season, because, quite frankly, half the league just got signed and or traded or signed and traded. So a lot of those guys, most of the league can't even move again until December the 15th. So I think that's
right.
The next deadline. If they get into the season, that's probably the next time you probably look to, is once December 15th happens, what can you do? And if, at that point, you know, again, I've always said if they have to buy them out, it's not a terrible thing. They've always already won. But like you mentioned, extracting value for an asset, if you have to include more assets to get a better asset, that's just good. That would be good work. And so we'll see. It remains to be seen. But David, I appreciate it, man. Thanks for joining me. Thanks for on this, as we record Monday night in the middle of July, talking about Grizzlies. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem, man. Appreciate you having me, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right, man. We'll do it again soon.